Hello, welcome to Be a Terrier. Stephen Chickenhead joined by David Hartrick. How are you doing, Dave?
I can barely hear you, this internet's so bad. We're in the same room.
Yeah, looking at each other during. Imagine that. Why are we together on this lovely Thursday afternoon, Dave?
Well, because things are changing, and I'm going to leave you to explain the bulk of it. But before we get into a fascinating game of football with lots of things to analyse and say, I'm going to turn it over to Stephen to just have a little explainer.
Yeah, so many of you have probably seen the news coming from Reach that there's redundancies being made across the company, of which I'm proposed to be one of them. It's not just me, obviously. I've not been singled out or anything like that, but it's, you know, it's a widespread thing across the company. There's still a lot to work out, not least of which would be my exit date. But it is, as it stands, looking like the Examiner will be stopping coverage of Huddersfield Town, and I will no longer be employed by them. Nothing is final just yet, but that is very much the direction of travel as it stands. So I have been given permission to do this, but Dave and I are looking at basically continuing the Huddersfield Town coverage because we recognise that really there isn't the Examiner goes, there isn't really a neutral voice out there beyond it being, it would be BBC Radio Leeds and it would be a tenth of the Yorkshire Post. And no disrespect to either of those organisations who both provide fantastic coverage, but they aren't, for various reasons, because Town are one of several clubs for both of them. It's one of three clubs for Radio Leeds, it's one of ten for the Yorkshire Post. So I think Dave and I know that there would be a gap there, both in terms of what the fans are getting and what they need, and also a gap there for us to look to fill. We were looking at launching a Substack, basically. So we're going to go freelance. This podcast feed that you're listening to will probably go, but we will be continuing the podcast. It will still be the same high quality podcast you're used to, still be the same coverage, the same analysis, but it will be on a different service. So the upshot of this is, obviously, I'm not going to be in full-time employment to do this anymore. No one will be paying me to do it. So we are, and particularly having spoken to some people on Twitter and spoken to some fans and seen the messages that people have sent, we've decided that we're going to basically paywall everything, or nearly everything, which is not out of any sort of greed or anything like that, because frankly, Dave, neither of us are expecting to make a living out of this full-time, but it is sort of also not going to be possible for us to do it unless we are compensated at least a little bit. But we think we've put together, we just had lunch and we think we've put together a quite an attractive offering, which would be a weekly podcast, or at least weekly-ish. I can't guarantee that every international break we'd do too, but we would certainly aim to do a weekly podcast, and at least two quality pieces a week, which would include the five conclusions. If those are things that are of value to you, then we are looking to charge £5 a month for you to continue to get that access and to get that level of coverage and that level of analysis. I think it's important to say it wouldn't be the full five pieces a day that you would get from the Examiner, again, just because financially Dave and I have other work that we would need to do on top of this, and we simply just don't have the time to work on it full time. But we think that a lot of the stuff that you're currently getting from the Examiner is things like injury news, predicted lineup, things like that, that really you can get elsewhere. The club website would provide that, Radio Leeds would provide that. What we want to provide is the analytical stuff on top of that, the podcast, and fire conclusions and other quality writing.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, you're still going to get the podcast. We will be doing, as we go forward, we will be doing other bits and bobs, but you have to work out, you have to understand that this is an evolving situation for me and Steve as well. So we're being brutally honest with you. We don't want the Town coverage to stop because there needs to be a sort of analytical voice in there. our circumstances have both changed. Steve's is quite public. Mine is changing. And I'm going to just be honest and say I've done this podcast for 4 years and never been paid anything for it at any point. So just think of it as buying me a pint at long last. But for that £5 a month, you're going to get the podcast every week, two quality pieces from Steve, and there will be other stuff going forward. But as I said, we are literally trying to work out the sort of the format of everything going forward. But that will be your basic structure that is there every week, week in, week out. There will be, as I said, there will be times when stories are happening and things we need to cover with a little bit more, and we will be doing so. We've already discussed that.
The other thing to stress is that for that £5 you're getting a very readable experience. There's not going to be loads of ads popping up on the screen or anything like that. It's all basically, you go on, no ads, no interruptions, dead easy to read, which I know for a lot of people can be a bit of a turn off at the moment.
Town articles that load up on a website. That's new. That's weird.
I can't comment.
I can. So, yeah, but what you're not going to get is just us reporting every transfer rumour, us turning every press conference into five pieces, and all of this sort of thing. You're going to get the five conclusions, as Steve said, something else. Player ratings as well, Steve?
Yeah, looking at potentially running player ratings for free, just to sort of, for people who don't have the means to subscribe, or people just to, you know, who are I know people are interested in player ratings, and just a way of attracting new people to the feed. And that may be a consideration for us as well, you know, whether we look to put, we're still working it all out, and a lot of it will depend on what sort of sign up we get.
Yeah.
But you may find some stuff goes into the free feed at a certain point, or that we do a podcast every now and then might go into the free feed. But again, it sort of depends on where we get to with it, how many people sign up, and how viable it is to do all of these things.
Yeah, and we have to. We're not, as Steve said, it's not suddenly we decided to charge what equates to about £1.25 a week because we're just being greedy. It's because there are practical things that have to be paid for us to literally set this up, because, you know, it has all been backed by Reach. It's been their equipment, it's been their feeds, it's been their websites. For us to continue this for you, you know, we've got to pay for various items out of our own pockets to do it. So, yeah, and I think I'm just going to come out and say it, Steve. I think £5 is extremely reasonable as well.
We'd like to think so, yeah. So we've set up a Substack. It's currently set up so that you can subscribe free of charge. At a certain point, as I say, the reason I've done that and set it up that way is because I don't know when I'm finishing with the examiner, basically. And I don't want to put a payment screen on there and have people paying to sign up and then going, hang on, it's been 2 weeks, why haven't I had anything? But we are really, really, really keen for as many people as possible, as many listeners, to sign up if you're interested in that service. If you go to otbat.substack.com, so that's as the initials for Ooh to Be a Terrier, .substack.com, you will find a little welcome there, but that's a lot of the same stuff that we've just said, and a sign up page. Most of all, we just need your email address at this stage, and then when we're ready to launch, whether that is December or January, and currently looking like it'll be sooner rather than later, but the earliest it might be would be the beginning of December. At that point, you will be first in line. You'll get everything straight to your email. And if at that point you want to go ahead and get signed up, you can do so.
Yeah, and just so you know, because the other moving part here is we're doing all of this. It's a bit of a scramble. We don't know all the details. Steve is just about to go on a very long booked holiday. So we're trying to get the pod out, get a sign up list out there, so that when we come back and Steve has more of an idea of kind of exactly when he's going to finish, exactly when we can start and everything else, we can tell people all the final specifics. But if you sign up for that, you are kind of ahead of the game. You are already there.
You're first in line for it. So yeah, head to Otbat. And again, that name might change. It's currently branded as Ooh to Be a Terrier. That is a brand name that belongs to my current employer. So we're seeing if there's something that can be done around that. If not, then it might change, but we'll see.
If it changes, it's only changing to something very similar.
Yeah. So head there and express your interest. Right, we've done nearly 10 minutes on that, Dave. Should we get into Huddersfield Town?
No, thank you. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
It was another game where I can't honestly think, looking at the players I set, what else I would have done from the first minute, but I think we can talk about how maybe I would have tried to change the game going forward.
Yeah, so Hull City 1, Huddersfield Town 0, and it was a bit of a sickener, 92nd minute. I sort of described the game in my conclusions as being like waiting for Godot, because I think we saw that we saw Josh Caroma on the bench, and we saw obviously Town came up and set up basically as they had against Watford, which was a performance we praised quite a bit last week, and it was obvious that they were setting up to play 0-0, and I was sitting there in the press box telling all the locals, I see what they're doing here. They're going to keep it tight for 60 minutes, 75 minutes until they can get Josh Caroma on, and then they might open up a bit at that point. And we're sitting there waiting, and then Romani Edmonds-Green needs to go off after about 70 minutes thereabouts, and we're like, okay, here we go, this is the change, and on comes Jaheim Headley instead.
Yeah.
And nothing against Jaheim Headley. You know, we talked last week and about the role that he played against Watford, but that was very much we're going to just stay in this shape, stay sitting in. We're not going to try and cause Hull any problems. Hull are a better team than Watford, and Town were away from home, but also Town, I think it's fair to say, not as good as they were against Watford. Certainly not at getting forward on the counter attack. And it's a game that has left us in two minds a little bit, Dave, I think, because we both can understand why Darren Moore has done this, but also completely understand why the fans are frustrated and upset by this result.
Yeah, the problem was, I think we've talked about there being ways to lose before, and they kind of, even though they've not gotten done for four, which they've knocked that habit on the head, which is good.
Yes.
Losing 1-0 with a XG of 0.07, it's also not the way to lose. I mean, I think part of the problem is that a lot of the fans will look at what Darren Moore did and think, well, I could set a team up to do that, you know, sit in. They just never... I understand it's a personnel thing, but they did have Kieran Harrott, they did have Brahima Diarra, they did have one or two options. They could have put Sauber up top just to try and stretch in a different part of the game. And they never even tried. And I think if it had gone for it for 15, 20 minutes and lost 1-0 in the 92nd minute, weirdly, I think people's reaction would have been not fine, but would have been a lot better than being so passive and then still losing 1-0.
I did wonder about that, and whether people would, in that circumstance, have criticised Darren Moore for changing the game, changing a plan that was working. So, but I mean, he said afterwards the reason he didn't use Josh Graham was basically he wasn't fit to play, neither was Kasumu. To which you might say, well, why were they on the bench then? But I think there is value in having them, one, to get them back reintegrated into the squad, having been out, particularly Kasumu, who's been out for a while. But two, also, I think, as a ploy to put a bit of doubt in Liam Rossini's head, so that he isn't going, well, they've got nothing from the bench, like Watford did, and just being able to throw everything at it, which unfortunately Hull ended up doing anyway, because Town was so passive and sitting in, they had nothing to lose. But I just think, you know, when you're picking Jonathan Hogg and Romani Edmonds-Green as your two central midfielders, and again, I got the team sheet, I should say, and I thought the same as you. I thought it'd be 3-5-2, Sauber Thomas playing alongside Hudlin and Wiles as almost as a 10. But Wiles was basically just an out-and-out right winger. Sauber Thomas on the left. We never liked Sauber Thomas on the left particularly, because I think you're removing his biggest weapon, which is his crossing, because he has to cut onto his left foot, which is not as strong. But it was... I can understand why fans would be upset at this complete a lack of ambition. And I think... People did accept it against Watford. We sort of were pleasantly surprised last week that the fans were so accepting of the performance against Watford. But I think everyone sort of understood that it was a necessary evil, having lost 4-0 and lost 4-1 in the previous two games. I think, and I'm with them on this, I expected to see a little bit more of a coming out of their shells in this game, to be honest.
Yeah, it was the general lack of ambition, because I mean, Town had two shots, and I think in the entire game they had, I think it was something like four touches in the whole box.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't need to be an analyst or statistician to tell you that's not enough to win a game of football unless it's very extraordinary circumstances. And I kind of think that in an away game, you kind of... Hull are a good side. They are a better side than Watford. So I almost feel like you do have a little sort of window to just try and go for it. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I think a point would have been... I think if they'd have got a point, we'd be sitting here going, okay, that's fine, that's another point. But I can't for a second say Town deserved it. You know, against Watford, they did deserve it because they played a different way in terms of... They really dug in, and they did actually hurt Watford a little bit going forward.
Yeah.
They did. And they created some space. They created some chances. And importantly, one of the things they did really well against Watford is releasing a little bit of pressure. Just knowing when to play the right out ball, knowing when to just go long. And they had Carl Hudlin, who we have praised enormously because he was holding up really well. He was winning three kicks. This was a different kind of digging in. This was
sitting in.
Yeah, sitting in. This felt like, I mean, it sounds kind of damning when I say this, but it did feel a little bit like non-league club against champ club in an FA Cup tie. And it's not great. I know it's a personnel thing, but at the same time, I think if you just show a little bit of ambition, it kind of goes a long way with some fans. Not all. Some would have still been unhappy, but with some.
I think there's something to be said for they did. You know, it was 92nd minute, and if they hold on for five more minutes, then I think we probably having a very different conversation where we're sitting here saying, well, it wasn't pretty, but they got a point, and it's a good point. Any point away from home is good, particularly against the top half side. But the problem with this approach that they took is that it makes the result absolutely everything, because there's no other positives to point to. You can't point to anything in this game other than, yes, okay, they've got a bit more defensive solidity, but we'd seen that against Watford already. They have not taken any kind of forward step in this game. There's no real positives to point to, and they've not got the result out of it either. So you're kind of left with nothing else to hold on to, which is, again, just not a good feeling, particularly going into a two-week break where fans are going to have to sit on it for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. We are always acutely aware of fans have every right to feel how they want. And before we even get into some of the sort of analysis here, I think it's worth saying, you know, I saw the reaction to this. And on social media and everywhere else, it was bad, Steve. I mean, I listened back to the Radio Leeds phone-in after, and yeah, it was grim because of that lack of ambition. But the thing is, there is a balance to be struck, but I just don't think they struck it here because they really didn't lay a glove on them, and that is not what anybody wants to see. We've talked about one of the big things the Town crowd wants is just to see a little bit of their identity out there. And I think if they just see a little bit of their own identity out there, they're kind of accepting of other things. And that Watford game, I think that's what they got. I think that's what they saw. Yeah. Here, it was way too passive. And I mean, I really felt for Lees, Hellick and Pearson because... Yeah. I wouldn't say it was like the Alamo because Hull aren't as good enough to make it like the Alamo, but so many times they were being asked to kind of put their body on the line, etc., knowing it's just going to come straight back at them.
Yeah.
It's just an absolutely thankless task for them.
I also felt sorry for Silver Thomas, who was constantly being given the ball. It's like, okay, we need to get out of our own half, just give it Silver and make him run 50 yards, and then he does it, and then there's no one there except... Yeah. Carl Hudlin being marked by four men, kind of thing. And the analogy I used was, it was like watching, when you get on your Instagram feed, one of those like three professional footballers against 100 kids. It sort of felt like that. I mean, Town were, I think one of the fundamental issues was the fullbacks who were, you know, nominally wing backs in a back five, but really were playing properly as fullbacks, whether by because they were so penned in they just couldn't get forward, or whether it was an instruction. Either way, Nakayama and particularly Jackson barely crossed the halfway line. Yeah. I put the touch map in the five conclusions, and they barely crossed the halfway line. And that, I think the first 2 minutes it was quite evident, okay, Town are setting up like they did against Watford, so Wiles and Thomas are going to come in and play very close to Kyle Huddlin, almost play as two number 10s, and the fullbacks are going to go outside them and provide the width. But because the fullbacks weren't getting forward, you ended up with Sorba Thomas and Ben Wiles were basically just standing on the wings, on a hide into nothing, as isolated as Kyle Huddlin was. Mm. And bless him, Nakayama did try and get forward, but you need a whole team to do it. And I think, again, nothing against Hogan and Edmunds Green. I think they are a viable... It's viable to play them in a midfield together, but as part of a three. If you're playing them as part of a two, respectfully, you're not going to be building very much. It's very, very conservative. It's very, very, these are our two best defensive midfielders, isn't it?
I thought, just before we move on from Ben Jackson, I thought he was good again.
Yes,
I do think he was good again. But that... with the personnel, the problem is the creativity problem remains even when they get the personnel back, because we're not looking at Jack Radoni to be like a playmaker. He's not like a real sort of passing eight. What he does is he gets into spaces that other mm-hmm. people don't, but you kind of want him on the end of things, and you can't always start the thing and end the thing.
Yeah.
And that lack of creativity... We've been told Darren Moore is being brought in to play attacking football. It's that lack of creativity and that lack of... Because Sorba, bless him, teams do work out that if you double up on him, there's nothing else there. Yeah. And, you know, you're exactly right. The times he did make an impact and get through, he's just trying to cross it to one person. And just to clarify, that is four separate people, not four people in an overcoat trying to stand next to him. But
that would be about equivalent now.
Yeah. It does end up looking quite bleak, to be honest. I can't think of another word other than that, but it does end up looking quite bleak. And, you know, I know we keep saying you've got to get till January, they need some more players, etc., etc., but it really was a performance where you kind of didn't learn everything, but you did see the problems laid even barer than perhaps they had been at other points before.
Yeah, I think... this isn't Darren Moore's preferred style. I think it needs to be said. He did say afterwards he would prefer to have taken the handbrake off. I think he's, and we saw this just before, it's quite early in a managerial reign to be having deja vu, but we said this going into the last international break when they drew 0-0 against Sheffield Wednesday, and it was, well, this was a response to having lost and conceded four goals in the previous game, or recently in this case. But then it's like, but how much of that is a creation, a circumstance of his own creation? I think you and I, though, are both of a mind that, and we've sort of been, I think, quite consistent with this. For all we've had criticisms, I think it's still very hard to really judge Darren Moore with the personnel issues they've had. And I don't mean necessarily the injury crisis. I mean the transfer window and... as you touched on a couple of weeks ago, Dave, several years really of underinvestment in the squad for various reasons. Obviously, you know, I think between the either side of Phil Hodgkinson's reign, there has been a limitation through COVID, through the ownership situation, through relegation, through all of these things. There has been limitations on the club and the owners' ability to invest. And I think this summer it was not an issue of willingness so much as it was an issue of being able to get those deals done for various reasons that hopefully in the January window it's a different ball game for them. And you know, I don't want to sound like I'm blaming Phil Hodgkinson and Dean Hoyle for all of the problems, because they each had their own issues to contend with over the past few years. You know, Dean Hoyle came back in sort of against his will. Phil Hodgkinson, we know, had other issues with his businesses, and of course, again, the most of his reign was the COVID pandemic. But this is a club, whatever mitigation you want to put around it, that has not invested over the past few years, and it is going to take time for the current ownership to put that right. I don't think that necessarily gets them off the hook, obviously, for this summer, because I think even the signings they did get done, I think it's quite open that I'm not a great lover of Delano Bergsorg, and I don't think you could particularly make a case of Ben Wild so far either. I think he has struggled and continued to struggle in this game. I think you and I both think he's perhaps not quite fully fit.
Yeah,
he keeps stepping on the ball and stumbling over the ball, and just, I don't know.
He looks like he's suffering at the moment. I think physically and mentally, I think he looks like he's suffering. He looks like a player that in a different squad, in different circumstances, you'd pull out and say, right, just go on holiday for the week.
Yeah.
Town can't do that. But they're up against the side again where you look at the subs they bought on. Cyrus Christie would certainly be in Huddersfield Town squad, if not the first team. Aaron Connolly would certainly be in Huddersfield Town squad, if not the first team. Ruben Vinegar, Mr. Vinegar, would undoubtedly be...
Why is that funny?
It just is. I would argue would probably be a starter.
Vinegar on a starter.
But these are the issues, and it's kind of, like I said, it looks so bleak because these were without... It was the chickens, no pun intended, coming home to roost a little bit. You know, there really was nothing else to do. And I just think it's that classic thing of... I think while we're both preaching for patience with Darren Moore, and we kind of are because of the context and the circumstances, I think we also totally acknowledge the fact that we have seen nothing new from Darren Moore. Everything that's happened today has either been a version of something that's come before, it's been a player's individual role where they've either reverted back to doing what they were supposed to be doing anyway, Sorba Thomas.
Yeah.
Or they've kind of just been put back into a natural position for them. And I think that's what's happened with Ben Jackson, because I think he's good at right back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem with Ben Jackson is often it's that balance, because he's kind of really good going forward as well. It's how do you make the most out of him? But he's good in that position. We haven't seen anything new tactically.
No.
We haven't seen anything sort of innovative or different. You know, the Watford game was good, but me and you sort of kind of picked a team before the game to start, and it was basically the same team as started because there was nothing else to do. The difference was we didn't know Harrop was unavailable at the time.
Yeah.
So we come into this game and it's kind of the side we would pick because, you know, I think we both would have had Josh Caroma in the side if he'd been anywhere near fit for an hour, but he wasn't fit enough to do an hour. But it was kind of the side we would have picked anyway. It was kind of the setup we could have kind of put them in.
I would have gone 3-5-2 as we discussed. But
yeah, but it would have been a 3-5-2 that certainly collapsed into a back five out of possession anyway. So the problem is, I think one of the reasons the fans are struggling a bit with Darren Moore is because they haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah.
And I do get that. I do understand that, because we're in the same position. We're not sitting here saying we think he's definitely the man to take Town forward, etc. It's just that right now, at the moment, I kind of find it very difficult to judge him on certain aspects. I can judge him on some.
Yeah.
Absolutely fine. But there are certain things... I mean, people keep telling me Warnock would have got much more of a tune. He had 8 points after 8 games.
Yeah.
And he wasn't... Town weren't singing.
No.
And that final game, his final game, the draw, that was awful.
Yeah, they were absolute shambles defensively against Stoke.
Yeah.
They lost 4-0 to Norwich.
I still think is the worst performance of the season.
No, and don't get us wrong, we're not going, oh, it's all Neil Warnock's fault. I don't think it was... a lot better because Neil Warnock had the same problems that Darren Moore has had. I think Darren Moore has had more problems in that he has had that injury crisis.
Yeah.
I think he has also had some self-inflicted issues in some odd selection decisions that you would hope he has learnt from, that if they'd stuck with Warnock, yes, if they'd stuck with Warnock, they wouldn't have played Tom Edwards against Leeds. I think that is fair to say. If they'd stuck with Warnock, you know, I think you probably would have had Ben Wiles playing in a position he was more familiar with rather than, you know, playing in a number 10. I think there is an argument about familiarity with the players that because Moore has come in and been unfamiliar, he's had to learn it on the job, which, frankly, will have cost Townsend points. But I don't think it's cost them a load of points. As I say, when you look at... I think you can look and say, well, Warnock had a very difficult start to the season, and he did have tough games. But I think, actually, the way that the league table has shook out, some of the games that looked really, really tough for Warnock on paper, actually, when you look at the table now, aren't so bad, you know? Norwich and Stoke and... You know, even Borough at that time, they got Borough kind of at exactly the right time to play Middlesbrough. So
you know, he had 8 points after eight. We now have 15 points after 16. Mm-hmm. It's not a million miles behind. So it's not a case of if they'd have stuck with Warnock, they'd now be on 24 points with Cardiff and looking at the playoffs. And we know, we're not stupid, we know why Neil Warnock, when he left, said they should be looking upwards, not downwards, etc. And that's because Neil Warnock wants to make Neil Warnock look like Neil Warnock, it would be fair to say. So, but I'm still in the same position I have been, really, which is I would stick with it. I would really want to see some early transfer activity in January. And the key word there is early. It's not just transfer activity. They've kind of, you know, if it's a trolley dash at the end of February and you've got players there that you're bringing in and they've kind of need 2-3 weeks to get up to speed, then that means you almost haven't got full strength till March. That's not good enough. They've kind of got to get one or two key players in early so that they're up and running by the end of January. And, you know, if things are still the same come the end of February, me and you, I think, will be even in a different place. Really. Yeah.
I think there's other considerations as well. Like, even if... I think you and I are probably still undecided on a lot of Darren Moore. It's not like you and I are big fans of his, you know, who've thought it was an amazing appointment. You know, if you go back and listen to the episode from when he was first appointed, you'll hear that we had mixed feelings on his appointment, and I think that sort of remains the case. But there's other considerations around. You can't just keep sacking managers because at a certain point, you know, look at Watford. Everyone laughs and jokes about Watford, and clubs get a reputation. You know, Sheffield Wednesday, I know, are complete, you know, have other issues, shall we say, with their owner. trying to stay on the right side of libel here, have other issues with their owner, but again, it's, you get a reputation at a certain point if you keep getting rid of managers. How many have Town had in the last...
Well, if they got rid of Darren Moore today, it would be 6 in 18 months, not including caretakers, which is
a lot.
It is not, I mean, that is not the sign of a stable club, it's not the sign of a stable squad. But the other side of it is that I'm not, please don't read too much into this, but you can't have a situation where players in the squad are thinking they can just wait out the manager either. They've got to get the work done. They've got to do it now. And unfortunately, I think there is a kind of natural proclivity to that when you've had 5 in 18 months as it is. And the other thing we talked about briefly on another pod was you also just got to look at how different those philosophies are. You know, exactly. Danny Schofield to Mark Fotheringham, Carlos Corberan to Danny Schofield to Mark Fotheringham to Neil Warnock to Darren Moore. I mean, it's... Yeah.
You've got to stick with something at some point.
And yeah.
I think the other thing here is I'm a little bit once bitten, twice shy, because I was probably Carlos Corberan's fiercest critic at one point and was openly saying in the paper, basically, they need to get rid of him. And turned out he was all right. And the issues were in the squad, not with what he was doing. And also, that second season Carlos had, Town were the massive beneficiaries of having a load of players who had already had a year playing his style and who knew what they were doing. And sometimes you do need to stick it out. And I think if Town really believed in Darren Moore when they appointed him, I think they would have anticipated that there was going to be a difficult transition. I think maybe... They quite openly didn't expect it to be quite as difficult as this. I also don't think they would have anticipated the level of injuries that they've had. But again, I don't want to make a massive excuse out of that, because, you know, you've got to find a way anyway. And I think it's, you know, we're talking about a game where that is less of an excuse here, the whole game. But I sort of think he at least needs to get through January and get some of his, it's a typical thing to say, but a proper football man thing, but get some of his own players in. And I also think there's a bit of a thought experiment here. What if Town had sacked Darren Moore at the start of the season and Neil Warnock came in and had this run of form?
Yeah.
I think fans would be saying he needs to get his own players in.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think one of the single biggest differences, I said it to you via WhatsApp, is that Darren Moore doesn't make you laugh during a press conference. Mm-hmm. And it seems a glib, trite comment, but I honestly believe that. I think the problem is that the fans, you can still warm to a manager and you can still believe in a manager even through a bad spell. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that I'm kind of looking at it as, I've looked at Darren Moore's previous career, where he's had difficult moments and where he's had difficult stretches, and there is usually a bounce back. You know, he does have a bit of a track record here. But I think the other side of it is that it's not even a case of kind of getting, for me anyway, it's not even a case of like kind of getting Darren Moore some of his players in January. It's kind of, they've got to get some players in.
Yeah, yeah.
Still,
yeah.
I'm not 100% sure Jackson is the answer at right back, so I think they've got to look and see if Ollie Turton is going to be the answer there. I've said it before, I still think they need that passing creative midfielder.
Yeah.
I think they need another winger at the club.
Yeah.
And, of course, striker.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a couple of loanees there who I think they need to decide if they're going to keep them. You know,
well,
Edwards and Bergsorg.
Well,
I think everyone knows how many want both of those.
is there a decision to be made? I think we're laughing about it, but
I mean, Bergsorg could come in and change our minds. I think you and I differ slightly on this. The reason that I get frustrated with players like Delano Bergsorg, as I do to Giannini Abakuna, is there's nothing that drives me up the wall more than a player who clearly has something, who has a bit of talent and a skill and an ability to do things, and instead of trying to use that skill set to win football games, they use it to just basically try and entertain themselves on the pitch, and it doesn't matter about anyone else or what the result is or what the effect on the team is. And people who will not listen to the instructions to do those things and keep it simple sometimes and play for the team, that is what drives me up the wall most of it.
The thing is, you can have that player. Anthony Knockhart drove us to a promotion doing that, but the difference is they have to deliver. And my issue, to go public with it, is I've just not even seen that yet. You know, I'm just being honest. I don't see anything there at the moment. I would love to be proved wrong, but I just see a footballer who, even the good stuff, so I'm well aware he scored a couple of goals, but they still kind of felt like they were accidents. But
our point here is, I mean, it's a bit early to talking about January transfer window, but I think our point is, even the signings they did made have not come good, and particularly, I think, you know, those attack minded signings, Wiles and Bergsorg, I think are not paying off. Josh Corona is not in form. I almost realised this back, I'm sure it's a point lots of people have made already, and I'm just very slow and stupid. Make sure you sign up to that Substack. But I think Darren Moore struggles a little bit to know what to do with players who play in those pockets, because when I was doing the power rankings, I was like, Brahim Diarra, he doesn't seem to know what to do with him, and Ben Wiles, he doesn't seem to know what to do with him, and Josh Caroma, he doesn't seem to know what to do with him.
Yeah.
It feels like, and again, against Hull, we're talking about Huddling being so isolated. It sort of feels like if they can get any one of those players playing in those kinds of spaces, because Jack Radoni's not there. You know, it's fine when Jack Radoni's there, because he's going to do his midfield role and he's going to pop up in those spaces. But they don't have anyone who is as good as Jack Radoni.
No.
Frankly.
Or close.
Yeah, so they might need to turn to a specialist to play in that position. But I think Darren Moore needs to show us, and historically, you know, if you look at Sheffield Wednesday's stats last year, they got tons of goals from midfielders, from attacking midfielders, so it's not like he doesn't know how to use those players, but he's not shown it at Town yet.
No, and I think the two of those positions, So that midfield creator and a winger, which I think would make a difference, because I just think there's so much weight on Sorba Thomas's shoulders at the moment. It's just so easy to double up on him and sort of nullify that threat. Two of those positions are in the Championship. They are very popular Premier League loanee positions. And Town have had some really good success with loaning players in those positions. Aaron Moy, Carol Eiting to an extent, you know.
Emil Smith Rowe.
Joseph Hungwer came in and got some really important goals.
Yeah.
You know, there are other examples as well. That's the kind of thing that you kind of think, okay, well, you need to get that sorted quickly. Because my problem with Darren Moore's Town, more than anything else at the moment, is I just think they're very easy to play against.
Yeah.
And I think one of the criticisms that is levelled with the Warnock comparison, which is inevitable and we do understand it, even if we don't like it, but like the Warnock side, at the very least, would try to be difficult to play against in most games. So I know we had there were bad performances, but I don't think he would have done a Watford and then followed it up with the kind of the same thing against Hull.
He would have done Watford, I think, but he wouldn't have done that.
He would have changed the questions.
Well, remember last year they did have a spell after Burnley and Coventry. Again, we've got an example of it because they lost 4-0 and 4-0. And for a few games, he did go more defensive, Warnock, and they were sitting in just trying to play on the counter. And then suddenly against Sunderland, he went, right, we're high press now. Brahim Diarra is in at number 10. We're going to go to a high press. And he did that basically just to surprise Sunderland. Hmm. And it worked. So they stuck with it through to the end of the season. And it kept working. And that's how quickly it can sort of change. And I can understand the fans need a reason to believe that Darren Moore is going to get there at some point. He's going to get that moment where he goes, right, we're changing the script now, and he does something that works, and then the momentum is there. I think the difficulty is, you and I talked about this last week, the next two games, again, are really hard. I feel like this season, and again, not making excuses because this applies to Warnock as much as Moore, but I think apart from maybe Middlesbrough, Town have had a really unfortunate habit of playing teams at the worst possible time this season.
Yeah.
Because Southampton started very iffy. Their defensive record is almost like bottom three. That I think they've only conceded two fewer goals than Town this season. But you know, they're fourth because they've sort of cracked it now. They've settled into the division and they're starting to get a bit momentum. And then away to Sunderland, who are sixth at the moment. And yeah, it's
The other thing is, we're not saying we've got the answers either. This is a very difficult situation, so it's not like we're sitting here, it's not like Steve's looking at those games and going, if they just move so and so. These are difficult fixtures with difficult questions to answer, but I'm just repeating myself, but there's a way of losing.
Yeah, and I think you and I as well are in a weird position. I think there's been moments over the past sort of 4.5 years where you and I have strongly disagreed with the fans on certain things. I think sort of the reaction to the Cowleys towards the end of their tenure, for instance, is one where we were
very
at odds with the fans. I think there's been times where we've been completely with the fans, as with Fotheringham and Schofield, unfortunately. And this is kind of an unusual one where we're not really sure. Like, we can sort of see
every viewpoint,
both sides of it. But I think my main consideration at this point, even if you're not a big believer in Moore, I do just keep coming back to, if they did change it now, one, who are they going to get that's going to come to a club that sacks it, that's already sacked two managers this season? Two, are they actually going to get any kind of meaningful improvement out of this squad now to take you through to January? And if not, then is it worth just, you know, you might as well at that point stick with Moore and get to January and see if he can do something with the new signings. You know, I think even if you're not a great believer in him and sort of don't particularly like him, I think that has to be a consideration, and the club have to stick with something at some point, you know.
Yeah, the one thing I am at odds at is I saw a lot of people saying the club should sack Moore and go on bended knee back to Warnock. No.
No.
They really shouldn't. They have to move on from that. And I think fans have to move on from that as well, because that is not the answer here. And the other thing is, like, last season was a real, I mean, we described it as a miracle on here, and it really kind of was, you know, it was a set of circumstances that kind sort of came together that could happen another 9 times out of 10 and Town would be down, you know, they'd be playing League One football now. So they've got to try and plan. They've got to try and move on with something. They've got to try and have a different viewpoint, because you can't just keep returning to the well. And as I said, it wasn't like they were like pulling up a load of trees under Warnock and knocking around the playoffs. They were struggling. So yeah, it's difficult. I do understand the reaction. I do think that there are some very serious questions can be asked of Moore's tenure, but I also think there are some very serious context and circumstances that you have to consider. But we do acknowledge, like,
yeah,
the pressure is there now.
This is just our view, really, yeah. Ultimately. Yeah. You know, this is, again, sometimes we'll sit here and get on our pulpit and say, no, you are wrong. But I don't think either of us are quite doing that at the moment. But yeah, I think I would err on the side of patience. I think the other thing, obviously, context and everything, I know they've got the same number of points as they had this time last year. But last year, I think there were 5 bad teams in the division, like really bad teams in the division, and Town were definitely one of them. This season, there are 3 really bad teams in this division, and they're all below Town at the moment. Yeah. It's not going to last forever if Town keep getting the results they do.
No.
But they're all 2 games away from Town at least, even if Town were to lose. And I think that does play into how Town have to think about these things, like the fact that they aren't in that immediate does change things a bit, even if things aren't great in their own shop.
Yeah, I think the problem is if they do fall into it, me and you are both the opinion
that it's a different conversation at that point.
It's very, and it's difficult then to drag themselves out of it. So yeah, I kind of think that we can't write off the next 2 games. They have to get something from one of them.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Even just a point.
Yeah. It feels a huge ask, but they kind of have to. And unfortunately, that's a situation of their own making as well. Because say they go and lose both those games, then I don't think the pressure changes at all. They have to then go and actually get a couple of wins. It's not even about just getting something. They have to get a couple of wins.
Well, that's the thing. After Southampton and Sunderland, they're into a run where it's, you would expect them to win their home games, really. I've put the points target up on the website, and they are playing, apart from Preston, who are 5th, but again, Preston have only just come off a wobble, and they've come off that wobble by beating Blackburn and, was it QPR?
Yeah.
So they could easily drop off again and become one of those mid-table clubs by the time Town play them. And the rest of the teams they're playing are all 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th in the table. So they're teams that you would expect them to get 3 points at home and go for a point away from home. And they need to get that. I think if through to the new year, they've got 9 games, I think. And I think a point per game is probably their par. But obviously, ideally, you want them to exceed that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been another cheery one.
Yeah. And a point per game is very low for us to say. We normally say 4 points from every 3. But again, I think just circumstances being what they are, and the fact that they've got no momentum whatsoever coming out of this break and are likely to struggle to gain that momentum with the games that they've got, I think that's kind of realistic. But as long as those bottom 3 continue to be dreadful, a point per game would probably be fine for them, actually.
I think the kind of where I am with it is, I think after the Southampton game, I think after that one, every point they drop at home is a point they've got to get away.
Yeah.
So if you keep going on losing home games at that point, that really is creating a rod for your own back. Now, I know, like we saw last season, teams are capable of putting together a really good run, but it's the Championship is like in a permanent state of flux, and I think this season I think the quality of the Championship was down last season. I think the quality is still not great. But I think besides the three relegated teams, you have probably two or three more who I would say are good. But then you have a clutch who I wouldn't say are kind of on a par with Town. I'd say they're a notch above. Yeah. And it's having to go to their place in the second half of the season and win games. That's difficult. That's tricky. So the pressure is real and the pressure is kind of understandable. And but I just think there was a real emotional outpouring after that game against Hull. Real emotional outpouring. And I do get it, because when you see that performance and you get nothing from it and you don't feel like they represent yourself on the pitch and all of these other things, these sort of, I'm slightly talking in cliches, but they're true. I do completely get it.
It does overshadow the fact that going into that game, you probably would have said, well, I would expect Hull to win that game 1-0.
Yeah. And that's it. It's Darren Moore, if he's going to lose the next two, they've got to do it bloody in Southampton's nose a bit. They've got to lay a glove on them. You know, we can't have another 180 minutes of football like we've had against Watford and had against Hull in the next two. And that, regardless of personnel, regardless of context, regardless of circumstances, that's just unfortunately the position they're in right at this minute.
Yeah. My media recommendation is to go to otbat.substack.com, Dave, and put your email address into the subscribe field and hit subscribe. I don't know about you.
My recommendation is a Substack that I've come across about Huddersfield Town.
OTBAT.substack.com. That's as it, the initials for Ooh to Be a Terrier. Substack.com.
That's it. As I said, there are still details we need to work out, but you need to understand you kind of found out just after.
Also, there is nothing really on there at the moment other than that welcome post, because I can't contractually put anything on there.
And you're not, the other thing to make clear, you're not going to get charged anything until
to subscribe.
To subscribe, you're not going to get charged anything until there is content going up that we're putting up there. So
and you will, you know, you're not on the hook to have to pay anything either. No. What will happen is you are basically expressing interest to say when we launch, you will get an email saying, right, we're up and running, and you will then have the option to subscribe at a paid level if that's what you want to do. So
we will,
nothing to lose at the moment from doing that at all.
We will tweet those links as well. I know we have a fairly hefty chunk of Twitter followers. I don't think we'd get away with doing it from the Examiner accounts, but we will. Our personal accounts are at David Hartrick, which is HARTRICK,
and at Stephen Chicken, that's Stephen with a V. Thank you for joining us, and thank you in advance to everyone who signs up, and massive thank you as well to everyone who sent really nice supportive messages to me already. Really genuinely appreciate it.
It's been horrible, but it's also been lovely because I got some reflected glory.
It's nice but also very scary. Lovely. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.